There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the Hoosier Huddle podcast. I'm Sammy Jacobs, your host, along with us co-host TJ Inman. And today we are stepping back outside of the Big Ten footprint to do our previews of other conferences. This week's conferences are the ACC and the SEC. So we'll take a trip down south and to the East Coast to review some of those football teams. Again, we'll go over, review what happened last year, coaching changes that occurred in the conference, give you our predictions, as well as the game of the year and a wild card team to watch. Before we start and bring TJ in, we have a quick word from our friends over at SeatGeek. I'd like to take a second to introduce our newest friends from SeatGeek. Let them take the confusion out of your ticket buying experience. Instead of shopping dozens of sites to find the best deal, let SeatGeek do the work for you. Their app scans the web for the best deals to your favorite game, concert, or show, and rates them on a scale of 0 to 10 to let you know if you're getting the best bang for your buck. A green dot marks great deals, yellow dot good deals, and red dot not so good deals. Use promo code ACAA at checkout to receive $20 off your first purchase. That's two free beers at the stadium on them. What are you waiting for? That's promo code ACAA for $20 off your first purchase. SeatGeek, life's an event. We have the tickets. Thank you to our friends from SeatGeek, and if you're looking for tickets, please visit them. Use that promo code, and hopefully you have a terrific time. Now we bring in TJ Inman on this rainy Monday evening here in Indianapolis. TJ, how are you?
Yeah, doing great. Certainly looking forward to a good conversation on a pair of conferences today as our kind of preseason coverage, if you will, ramps up. I know it's the media days are over, and it really feels like college football is right around the corner, which I know for all of us and for everybody listening is really exciting. As I was previewing the two conferences, kind of going through everything and preparing for the season and for this podcast, I'm really struck by one of these conferences, how kind of deep it is. And I think a lot of similarities to the Big Ten. And then one of the conferences I found to be, pretty lacking, to be honest, outside of one supernova at the top. So it'll be interesting to kind of go through them and see if we have a consensus on things or have some disagreements we can track throughout the season.
Yeah, there's definitely, as I was going through both of these conferences, there are things that I'm going to point out as we go through both of them. I want to start with the ACC and and that conference. We'll end with the SEC. The ACC, we're not going to include Notre Dame today in this. They're still an independent, although they play five ACC teams a year. It doesn't count as a conference game, and I don't think – in previewing a conference, we should include them. If you want to be included in a conference preview, join a conference. That'll go for UConn next year, Army as well, and UMass and BYU. But starting with the ACC, last year, Clemson won the ACC, won national title, went 15-0, and basically it was Clemson and the rest of the ACC. You had Pitt won the Coastal Championship. That was a wide-open division that looked like Virginia had a stranglehold on it for a while. Pitt went to Virginia and won and ended up winning the division. They've had a a different division winner in the Coastal the last 3 years. Pitt won in 2018, Miami in 17, and Virginia Tech in 16. And it's just, it's one of these conferences that, conference division that's wide open. And I think if you take Clemson out of the mix, both divisions are wide open. But Clemson is not leaving the ACC anytime soon. So, spoiler alert, TJ, I'm picking Clemson to win the ACC again. But let's go over coaching changes.
Yep.
First, there are a handful of coaching changes in the ACC. Louisville, let's start with Louisville. Bobby Petrino is out. That program just fell in a sinkhole with him there. And now they're bringing in Scott Satterfield from Appalachian State, who did a terrific job transitioning that program to FBS and becoming a real good group of five team that really nobody wants to play in Appalachian State. We'll talk more about them next week, but Scott Satterfield's in at Louisville. It'll be interesting to see because Louisville really bottomed out last year. I believe they went 2-10. They went 2-10, 0-8 in the conference, and I think they had more talent on paper than that. But the coaching situation just poisoned that tree real quick, and it went downhill real fast. So we'll see what Scott Satterfield could do at Louisville. In Miami, Mark Richt is out. He retired after two seasons at Miami. He took them to an Orange Bowl, lost Wisconsin, and really never got that swag back last year. Had an uninspired Pinstripe Bowl game against Wisconsin again, just outclassed by. And Wisconsin, they're a good program, but they were not real good last year. And Wisconsin took them behind the woodshed at Yankee Stadium and just beat the heck out of them. And is Manny Diaz. This is an interesting coaching carousel. If you're a Temple fan, Manny Diaz was going to be the head coach at Temple. I think he was for about 2 weeks. Miami came calling, and Miami and Manny Diaz have gone hand in hand for a while. And this was his dream job, and you can't, as bad as it is for Temple, you can't blame Manny Diaz for taking his dream job. When it opened, we'll see what they could do, if they could recapture some of that turnover chain magic. They do have Tate Martell now at quarterback. And it's just there's too much talent in South Florida for Miami to be, like, just mediocre. Elsewhere in the ACC, UNC, and this is where it's starting to get a little bit weird. UNC, Larry Fedora is out. They take the DeLorean and go back to the mid-90s. And hire Mack Brown. Mack Brown has been out of college football for the last few years. For those of you who watch noon games on ESPN2, Mack Brown has been on there. I've heard complaints about his announcing skills, so don't worry. You don't have to listen to him on ESPN2 noon games anymore. He is now coaching at UNC. I think this is – I really don't know what to think of this move other than it's kind of like a reach. He was successful before he went to Texas at UNC. UNC has had some really good years after that. They've had some really bad years after that, but they never had that sustained level of success that you think could happen in the Carolina area, where you have some good recruits, you're close to Charlotte, and things like that. So we'll see what Mack Brown could do in year two, how much time, or in tenured number two. And we'll see how much time they give them and whether or not the old guy is still hip to these younger recruits. Georgia Tech, they will not be running the triple option anymore. It is going to be really, really weird watching Georgia Tech and not have them run the triple option. Well, Paul Johnson is out. He retired. In comes Jeff Collins, again, from Temple. Two Temple coaches down in the ACC now. It's going to take a while for Georgia Tech to change this around. You're totally redoing the offense, becoming a more traditional offense. We'll see how that plays out. Georgia Tech has always been tough. They had won a couple conference titles with the option. They had won a couple division titles with the option. It was just something different that everybody had to prepare for. And while they didn't have all the best athletes that some of these other ACC schools had, they ran that option pretty darn well. And really did a good job with that. Your thoughts on the coaching staff changes, TJ?
I think there's a couple of very interesting ones. Scott Satterfield, I think, made a lot of sense. The thing that jumps out there is that the atmosphere surrounding that program at Louisville had gotten apparently very toxic and negative with the players around Bobby Petrino. It showed on the field. Scott Satterfield has said most recently at Media Day that really the first job that he had was to, as he put it, love the guys up. You know, it required a lot of rebuilding of confidence, rebuilding of morale. I do think it's going to take a little bit of time, obviously, to build the program. However, I do think that the buy-in factor is going to be very high for Louisville just because it's not Bobby Petrino. So I think that they won't have any problem having a higher level of effort on the field, but I do think it's from a talent perspective, it looks a bit grim for this year for Louisville, but I think that that will ultimately work for Satterfield at Louisville. I don't know what the ceiling is for that program. We might have seen it with Lamar Jackson, but I do think that it'll be a successful tenure for Satterfield. Looking at North Carolina,
One more thing on Louisville, TJ.
Yeah.
Maybe a little buyer's remorse there, too. They had their eyes and everybody's heart set on Jeff Fromm.
Sure.
They were convinced he was going to come back home, and he stayed at Purdue. So, you know,
It
has nothing to do with Scott Satterfield. He's a terrific coach, but it's kind of – you see it a little bit with Indiana basketball where you have half the fan base is like, oh, I wish I had this guy and can't really buy into the current head coach or, you know, head coaches in the past. And that's going to be something interesting to watch as well. So, yeah, go on with Mack Brown.
Yeah. I think the term that's been thrown around quite a bit is CEO. Is kind of a delegator, a guy that's going to be really good at booster events and glad handing big money donors and building up the fundraising efforts. Now, Mack Brown has said, look, I gave too much power to my assistants at Texas. I will not be doing that this time around. Like the coordinator hires that he had, they seem like progressive moves. Unlike Les Miles at Kansas, who kind of went with comfortable hires for himself. It seems like Mack Brown took hot up-and-coming young coaches, which I think is the way to go in situations like that. You've got to get guys that are aggressive and want that, still have that drive. So I'm interested to see how it works because I think the pieces are there to have some success in a short-term period, maybe a 3 to 4 year stint here for Brown, build the program up, and then it turns into an attractive job for either one of those young assistants that it can establish themselves, or, you know, you go out and hire somebody else with the increased fundraising efforts that Mack Brown kind of spearheads. For this year, not real high on what they've got. But I do think that they could be a little better than they were last year, which isn't saying a ton. I think that Miami, Manny Diaz, makes a lot of sense. We'll talk about Miami some. They're a real head-scratcher to me. I don't think that Miami is close to returning to an elite program. I don't see it. And that's not anything against Manny Diaz. I don't think they're going to catch that lightning in the bottle. I think there's too many programs that are, you know, competing for those players in Florida. Great talent base, but, I mean, there's so many programs, really quality programs, that are coming in and taking those players. I really think it's a tall order for Miami to get all of that back, or even most of it back. And then Georgia Tech, Jeff Collins, changing that program entirely from his recruiting efforts, really attempting to integrate the city of Atlanta into that program and rebranding what Georgia Tech football is. If you follow his social media posts, or you know, check those out, he's very aggressive in branding it as, you know, an Atlanta kind of Atlanta's school. Really going for that. We see that some with Chicago, with Illinois and Northwestern battling over it. Georgia Tech really is in Atlanta. Like, it's in the city. Very interesting program. It's felt like a sleeping giant for a long time. You hear that term thrown around a lot with it. You see a lot of Jeff Collins with, you know, Waffle House stuff, with, you know, artists or rappers that call Atlanta home, bringing them into the program some, really trying to up the cool factor. They're finally no longer with Russell Athletic. They're with Adidas, I believe. So it's a big change, but from a strictly on-field perspective, like you said, it's going to take a while because the players that you recruit and the types of guys you recruit, which Paul Johnson didn't want to have anything to do with high-level recruiting, the types of guys you recruit for the triple option, very, very different than what you're going to recruit for Jeff Collins. Now, what type of system are they going to run? He's been a bit wishy-washy about that, calling it like a pro-style spread, up-tempo, like a bunch of contradicting things that was just coach speak that told us absolutely nothing about his actual intentions for their offense. But
basic random words that they use to describe offense everywhere else. So pro style, spread, option, spread, field, you know, slow, fast, tempo, to go back to UNC, we're going to transition now into the schedules and winners. There's a very quirky schedule with UNC and Wake Forest. They will be playing a non-conference game against each other in September. This is something that, as an IU fan, I keep an eye on, especially if they start moving towards getting rid of an FCS, you know, an FCS game, which I think is a bad idea. You know, FCS programs need these games. And teams like IU need the win, and I think it's mutually beneficial. But if they do move into a game where you have to schedule a Power 5 opponent, in-conference, non-conference games could be attractive for the Big Ten. If I'm Indiana, I look at playing Illinois and Minnesota and start trying to build rivalries that way, maybe Northwestern every year as well. They're teams that are close, especially Illinois and Northwestern, in the West, are teams that are close in proximity. I don't know the years on rotation, but you don't play them every year. But if you had played them every year, maybe you build a little bit of a rivalry, with both of them. So that's a scheduling quirk in the ACC. I forgot exactly what week it is, but it's allowed. I forgot which technicality it was under, but I think they're doing this twice. It's a Friday night game, I believe, and I think it's good. You're on, you know, you're on Tobacco Road. You're in the same, you know, little triangle between Wake Forest and Duke and UNC. It should build that regional rivalry a little bit. It should gain local fan interest and. To be honest, if that game is not attended pretty well, at least when both teams are good, it should sell out when both teams are good. Wake Forest has a small stadium, and and I think UNC is around 50 or 60,000, you should be able to fill up 80% of that stadium. It creates a little bit of more of a rivalry on in-state and gains some fan interest as well. Plus, it gives you a winnable Power 5 game every other year. If you look at it, as the home team is supposed to win those games, and Wake Forest is trending up right now while UNC is going through a rebuild and a coaching change. That's a nice win and a nice feather in the cap for UNC. So that's something that maybe TJ will talk about in the future, if and when conferences realign, if and when conferences go to a universal schedule and things like that. But it's just something that, as an IU fan, you point at and go, that's an interesting, creative way to schedule a Power 5
yeah.
team without going and playing, Missouri or somebody who, you're taking a step up in weight class to play. Whereas if IU had scheduled Northwestern or Illinois or Minnesota or one of these matchup teams, you'd feel a little bit better about, than playing a Power 5 team like Louisville down the road, or even playing at Cincinnati in a couple of years as well. So let's go championship picks, TJ.
Yes.
I assume we'll both agree on the Atlantic as Clemson. I think it's Clemson and everybody else. I don't think Florida State's going to be that good. NC State is going through, sort of a rebuild with Finley graduating. Louisville's being totally rebuilt. And then you have Wake Forest, Boston College, and, Syracuse, we'll see what they could do without Eric Dungy. If they can find a quarterback, Clemson does have to go to Syracuse this year, and that could be the last time up there they lost. But Clemson's going to have to lose twice in order for somebody else to win the division. I don't see Clemson losing twice in the ACC. Out of the Coastal – out of the Coastal is anybody's. This might be a really fun division to watch. I think anybody could win it. You have Miami, Virginia Tech. Outside of Georgia Tech, I think anybody, and maybe North Carolina, anybody has a shot at it. You have Miami, Virginia Tech, Pittsburgh, Virginia, and Duke. Even though Daniel Jones is gone from Duke, we'll see. Cutcliffe always finds a way to be competitive with that Duke program. I'm probably going to have to take Miami with Tate Martell. I don't really feel that confident in it. I do think Virginia has a good team. I think Virginia Tech has a good team. But all of these teams in the past have shown that they've tripped up against good competition or some random road trip they lose. And it's just wide open. It's probably one of the more fun divisions in college football. So I think Miami takes it, but it's going to be close. It's going to come down to a game or two in this division, and it's going to be really, really interesting to see where they go. I think Miami has a favorable schedule. Their road games are North Carolina, Pittsburgh, Florida State, and Duke. Those are four winnable games, especially if Florida State continues to flounder under Willie Taggart there. They get Louisville at home. They miss Clemson in the regular season. They don't play Syracuse. They miss some of these top things. So schedule-wise, I think Miami – they get Virginia and Virginia Tech on back-to-back weeks at home as well. So I'm going to take Miami. How about you, DJ?
Yeah, obviously Clemson. I did have Syracuse finishing second in that division. I actually like Tommy DeVito quite a bit. I think Syracuse is going to be a more well-rounded team than they were a season ago, but still pretty explosive offensively. And I give them the edge as second in that division, which really is a cakewalk for Clemson. And then On the other side, it's a division that reminds me, in terms of how open it is, of the Big Ten West. I do think the Big Ten West is better overall in quality, but, similar, really. I did end up going with Virginia, choosing them over Miami. I do think the Canes have a little bit better schedule, so that gave me some pause, but ultimately went with Virginia's defense. Bronco Mendenhall, I have a lot of respect for him as a coach and a program builder. And then Bryce Perkins, I think, is a far superior quarterback to what Miami's going to bring to the table, whoever they end up going with, whether it's Tate Martell, Nicosi Perry, whoever they end up going with. I think we'll see Virginia come out on top. But like I said, the schedule does give me pause, as the Cavaliers do have to go to Miami, and they also go to Pittsburgh
on a Friday night
now.
Too.
Yeah, that they get, they do get Florida State, Duke, Georgia Tech, and Virginia Tech all at home. They really need to get over the hump against Virginia Tech. It's been a one-sided rivalry with them losing to the Hokies, and they really need to get over that one. And that one could have huge stakes on the line outside of just the rivalry. That'll be a huge game for Mendenhall to get that one for the Cavaliers. But I went with Virginia, and then Clemson really stomping them at the ACC title game. I think it sets up really well for Clemson to more or less be unchallenged outside of their own complacency.
Yeah, it's one division is really interesting. The other division could be interesting. And Syracuse gets Clemson at home as their homecoming game early in the season.
I think
September 14th up at the Carrier Dome. It'll be hot. It'll be rocking up in Western New York, but it's, that division with Clemson could be over. If they go in and roll Syracuse, that division could be over by the end of September, while the other division's wide open. So let's go game of the year. My game of the year, I'd probably pick it between a tie between Syracuse and Clemson on September 14th, and then Virginia at Miami in October on a Friday night. That has major division title implications. We saw Virginia was in it until November last year. If they go down to Miami and knock off the Hurricanes, that could, vault them into contention for the division title. You're right, it'll come down to that, the Commonwealth Cup down in with Virginia Tech, and they haven't won in a long time. Even with the teams when Virginia Tech has kind of been down and Virginia's kind of been on the rise, Virginia Tech has had their number. So that'll be a game to watch. So I'm going to go split it between the two, Clemson at Syracuse on September 14th, and then Virginia at Miami in October on a Friday night, I believe October 11th. October 11th on a Friday night. Both on a short week, it looks like. Virginia's coming off a bye. So Miami on a short week, Virginia with extra time to prepare, and that could be a fun game to watch as well. What are your game or games of the year in the ACC?
Those are the two I was choosing between as well. Didn't really see a good third choice, to be honest, outside of Virginia Tech, but that one's so late in the year, you really don't know if anything outside of the rivalry is going to be on the line, so it's hard to pick that one. So I did go with Clemson at Syracuse. I think it'll be a fun atmosphere. Plus, you've got to give that one the edge just because there are the national title implications, not for Syracuse, obviously, but for the Tigers. A loss there certainly makes it interesting if they're not that impressive the rest of the way. I still think they'd get in the playoff, but it would jeopardize them getting one of those top two seeds because the rest of their schedule outside of that game against A&M is not going to offer them a lot of chances to impress the committee outside of just, hammering the crap out of teams. So that's a game that they, they certainly could use as a statement game early on to say, look, yeah, we've had all this hype. Yeah, we're back as returning champs. And, yeah, we are just as good as we were before. So I'm going to circle that one, and I think that'll be very intriguing. Not a lot of entertainment to be had in terms of competitiveness for Clemson this year, I think. But that one, I think, will be a bit of a fight. Syracuse did knock them off a couple seasons ago. So who knows? It could get interesting. Dino Babers is a quality coach that certainly has improved Syracuse to the point where they're intriguing.
Hypothetical about Syracuse right now, looking at their schedule, let's say they beat Clemson.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They start at Liberty, at Maryland, Clemson, Western Michigan, Holy Cross, open week, at NC State, Pittsburgh, at Florida State, Boston College, open, at Duke, at Louisville, Wake Forest. Could they go undefeated? I think there's a chance. Nobody outside Clemson.
Yeah, if you beat Clemson, you can beat anybody. Yeah.
Yeah. Outside of the trip to Clemson, you know, everything else I think is a toss-up.
Oh, sure.
NC State is going to be rebuilding. Florida State, you don't know what you're going to get. And then, you know, at Duke, a Daniel Jones-less Duke team, and then a rebuilding Louisville team who, you know, if they're not performing well late in the season, you know, that might, I don't want to say a pushover game, because you could also get that where they're not performing well, but now they're gelling together and all these freshmen are now sophomores type of thing, and then Wake Forest at home. If they go undefeated, does Syracuse have a good enough resume to be included in the playoff?
I think if you're the ACC champion and you have a win over Clemson and you're unbeaten, absolutely, yeah. Yep.
All right. Yeah, I think that you're probably going to need to play somebody good in the ACC title game. I think Syracuse is always going
to
have that stigma around them. And you got to hope that Liberty knocks off somebody, that Maryland goes to a bowl, and Western Michigan has a good year in the MAC. And nobody cares what Holy Cross does in terms of schedule.
Since they don't play Miami, they don't play Virginia, they don't play Virginia Tech in those crossovers, I mean, any of those three as an ACC title game opponent, if, you know, one of those three comes in with 9 or 10 wins, you could add that as another, at the very least, another ranked win.
Yep. And just to be clear for our listeners, I'm not predicting Syracuse to go undefeated and into the playoff, but it's just, you know, this is what you think about in late July is if they knock off this team and theoretically knock off the rest of their schedule, can they be a playoff team? Wild card teams, TJ. Who's your wild card team in the ACC?
Well, just based on the schedule, I had Syracuse. I mean, we talked about it there. If Tommy DeVito can continue the level of play, not quite Eric Dungy level, but if he can be pretty good, you know, they returned 7 starters on defense, 6 on offense, including a pair of very good receivers, good running back in Moneal. You know, and then their defense should be improved. So if Tommy DeVito can, you know, and he showed in some action last year that he could be quality, if he can take a step up, I think Syracuse could be in for another very nice year just because of how well their schedule does set up.
Yeah, Syracuse, I'm going the opposite direction for wildcard team. I'm taking Florida State. They're a program
who went
5-7 last year. There's a lot of questions about Willie Taggart. If this team, does he get a quick hook at Florida State if they don't perform well? You'll know right off the bat with Boise State at a neutral site. And then you have a trip to Virginia in week 3 before 2 home games in an open week. And then you go to Clemson and Wake Forest. You could have 3 losses before October 19th. And that's going to make these Seminole fans very uneasy. Are you looking to replace Willie Taggart, who's only in his second – this will be his second year, but Florida State's coming off of, I think, a 6-win or 7-win in a 5-win year, and they had to get that last win by scheduling ULM late after a game got rained out to make sure they went to a bowl game with 6 wins in 2017. Is this, you know, are they an entitled fan base, an entitled football school who pulls the plug early? And this is it's a big time school and a big time job that will have implications nationally if they start this coaching carousel early. And that's why they're my wild card team. They could also be very good. They have guys coming back from injury. They have James Blackman. Cam Akers is back at running back. They always have athletes at receiver. The defense is usually really good. But it's can the offensive line protect these guys? Can they get the ball into their athletes' hands? And can somebody stay healthy at quarterback? Other than that, you know, they give Clemson a run for their money, but maybe they're also looking for a new coach in December. So they're my wild card team in the truest sense of the wild card. Let's move on to the SEC. And here's the thing that I noticed about the SEC this year. There are no coaching changes.
Yeah.
It's stability is the name of the game in college football. If you want to be good, you have to give a coach enough time to get his players in there, to lay a foundation, to set expectations and a culture, and then win. Sometimes you know it if it's true after 2 years. Sometimes it doesn't take until year 10. But there were no coaching changes in the SEC. So last year, we had Bama versus Georgia, 11 bowl-eligible teams, just like the ACC a year ago. Bama wins. They had Jalen Hurts come off the bench and rip the hearts out of Georgia fans again for the second year in a row. And I think it's going to be Bama and Georgia again. But no coaching changes. My championship game, it's going to be Alabama. I think it's going to be Georgia coming out of the East. I don't really trust Florida as much as I trust Georgia right now to come out of that division. And I think it's now or never for Georgia to beat Alabama. You're going to start graduating some of these guys and getting the stigma of you can't get over that hill. It's now or never for them. Alabama, they're just a machine. They keep rolling dudes out. You got Tua's back. You got Jerry Jeudy at receiver. The defense is going to be stellar. Offense is going to be stellar. Can they focus through the whole season and avoid that hiccup to Auburn or LSU and get to that SEC title game with an unblemished record and then take either the one or the two seed into the college football playoff? And that's what you're talking about with Alabama and Georgia. You're talking about somebody who's going to be one of the top two seeds, maybe a three seed in the college football playoff, and running with it. So that's my championship game prediction. What's your championship game prediction, TJ?
Yeah, I'm going to match you, Alabama and Georgia. Really, really big fan of Eric Fromm. I think he is Eric Fromm. Wow. Former Butler player Eric Fromm, not nearly as good at basketball as Jake Fromm is at football. So really big fan of Jake Fromm, quarterback for the Bulldogs. I think DeAndre Swift's a high-quality running back as well. A couple question marks regarding having to replace so much in the playmaking department, especially wide receiver for Georgia. But I do think that they're going to have a nasty defense again. They've got so much talent, recruiting so well. And I think the leadership and stability of Fromm is going to get them over the top of Florida. Alabama, I mean, what an offense. Tua, You've got Najee Harris probably going to be the bell cow back, but of course they've got a lot of options there as well. And then a receiving trio of, you know, Jerry Jeudy, Henry Ruggs, and Devontae Smith, like all three of those guys just so explosive, with Tua, you know, getting that ball around to him. I really like that offense for obvious reasons. But I do agree with you. You know, there's a little bit of vulnerability there just because we have seen them really get punched in the mouth. I do think, typically speaking, though, Nick Saban teams respond very well to that in the following season. So it would not shock me at all to see Alabama come out, really stomp some mud holes in people early on. I don't feel good if I'm Duke as Alabama gets to open up against the Blue Devils. And then it's New Mexico State at South Carolina, Southern Miss, and Ole Miss. I don't see any way that they're not 5-0 with five pretty easy victories before they head to Texas A&M on October 12th for what should be a really fun one.
Yeah, the only thing that has surprised me about Alabama this year is that they agreed to play a home-and-home series with Wisconsin. So Alabama is heading north of the Mason-Dixon line, I think, for the first time since 2011, in like 2024, 2025. Some place way too far down the road to think about. But
that's a fun game, though.
It is a fun game, and it's fun to think about. It's just 2025 can wait. But in terms of Alabama's schedule this year, they don't really have that marquee non-conference game. They're playing Duke. I think this is the return game from them playing at Duke in 2010, which was just a weird game to have Alabama come down to Durham and Wallace Wade Stadium. It's just, you know, it's weird. but, you know, they don't really have that non-conference opponent. You know, they have Western Carolina, New Mexico State, who else? Southern Miss and Duke. This is the non-conference schedule that makes people scream bloody murder. They want to see Alabama, Ohio State. They want to see Alabama, Michigan. Instead, they don't want to see Alabama, Duke, or Alabama, New Mexico State, or Alabama, Western Carolina. Nobody cares about that. They want to see Alabama play one of the big boys, and that's just not on the slate this year. The SEC is tough enough. So I understand what they're doing. Maybe this comes back to haunt them if they lose a game or two in the SEC. Well, they don't have that strength schedule, that non-conference opponent who's top five at the beginning of the year that they just absolutely hammered, like Florida State a couple years ago, to rely on. So it's going to be interesting. With Alabama to see if and when they trip up, and if that trip up without the cushion of a real tough non-conference opponent, where they fall in the playoff committee's eyes. But I do like Alabama to come out of the West again. And, you know, they do have to go to Auburn. They do have to go to Mississippi State, and that trip to Texas A&M is not an easy one. Neither is an early trip to South Carolina. But this is Alabama, and until they prove otherwise, you can trust Alabama. Out of the East, you like Georgia?
Yeah, Georgia over Florida. I do think Florida's pretty good, though. Early test for them against Miami in week zero. Give me the Gators in that one, and I think that will help further strengthen the case of the SEC. Not that they need any more pumping up of their ego.
Yeah, I don't trust Florida as much as I trust Georgia
right now,
which might make Georgia fans scream a little bit because, you know, the stuff surrounding Georgia sports is that they always choke and blow it away. But if you look at Florida in the East, you have to go to Kentucky, which could be a tricky game. You have to play at LSU in a crossover game. At South Carolina is tough. You get Auburn, of course, and I think the South's oldest rivalry. And then you end the year with Florida State, who, if they're playing well, that's a tough game. If they're not, you know, it's a brand name non-conference opponent, which could boost your resume and maybe send you to the college football playoff. But Florida's going to trip up somewhere along the way, whether it's against Georgia in the world's largest cocktail party or, you know, one of those 2 weeks where they're back-to-back on the road at LSU and out at South Carolina. And one of the themes, TJ, I'm looking at this year in terms of some of these conference division championships are these crossover games. And spoiler alert for the Big Ten, some of my Big Ten predictions come off of who are your crossover games. And if you have an easier crossover game, it really makes a difference than playing, you know, Ohio State, Michigan, and Penn State as your crossover games when you get, you know, Maryland, Indiana, and Michigan State or something like that. So I think those three games really play a difference. And I think in the SEC, when one team has to go to LSU and another team doesn't, it's going to make a difference. So I think Georgia as well. What is your who's your wild card team in the SEC, TJ?
I mean, so many options, because I really do think that there are, I mean, it's an understatement, you know, a lot of good teams in the SEC, but I think there's like six top 15 teams in the SEC. My wild card is Auburn. They play so many high-level contenders that I really think that they could be quite the spoiler. I mean, their schedule is ridiculous. Oregon, at Texas A&M, at Florida, at LSU, Georgia and Alabama at home. That's just a murderer's row. They could be a really, really good team and go 8-4. But, you know, I think that they've got an interesting team that if Joe Burrow takes a step up and if five-star running back freshman John Emery can be as good as what he looks like he could be, LSU is going to be an absolute bear to handle. And they will certainly take a couple of L's given the schedule, but they could really give some high-level opponents some losses as well, particularly at home when they host I was talking about LSU. I completely lost my train of thought. I apologize for that. But little bonus LSU coverage. Auburn, their schedule, ridiculous. They've got the difficult schedule. LSU does as well. But the most interesting thing for Auburn is going to be they've got a high-level defensive line, which is really important, obviously, in college football. The big question for Auburn is going to be, you've got a lot of returning starters on the offensive line, and all five are back. Who is going to be the quarterback? That's the big question. And I'm interested to see who they choose. Bo Nix, redshirt freshman Joey Gatewood, and then Malik Willis. Gatewood is a guy that comparisons from spring practice were, hey, he's playing like Cam Newton did, which is ridiculous, but it gives you an idea. Like, we've seen Auburn succeed with that before, kind of a big quarterback that not all that great throwing, but just, you know, bullies you. And Gatewood has the frame to do that. Even if they don't go with him, there's a lot of talent there, and it could be the best defense in the SEC because of Marlon Davidson and Derek Brown on the defensive line, two first-round NFL draft picks probably. And Auburn is going to have the chance to spoil some team seasons. I don't see them being an SEC West contender, but I do see them being good enough to give a lot of teams a lot of headaches. And even despite that schedule, winning 8 games. Now, that's probably not good enough for Auburn fans, I understand, but I think they're a very interesting team that could really ruin some seasons for a team like Auburn or a team like Alabama, a team like Georgia. You know, if you lose one game to Auburn, it's probably not a huge deal. But if you've already got a loss somewhere else, Auburn could knock you out of that playoff discussion right away. And, hey, if they get on a roll, that late-season schedule has them seeing Georgia and Alabama at home, and you can just imagine what the atmosphere is going to be like in those last four games, which are all at home, if Auburn is in contention for anything.
Yeah, it's kind of like that kick six year when Auburn had those two miracle plays to beat Georgia where I think it went off the defensive back's hands and into an Auburn receiver's hand in the last minute or so, and they scored a touchdown to win. And then, of course, the kick six against Alabama to go to the national title game is, you know, fresh in the back of the Alabama fans' minds. So you get those two guys at home, you get to dictate your own story. You beat those two, you should be going to the college football playoff and probably are representing the West in the SEC title game. And might get a chance at a shot at Florida. Auburn,
plus
you hold all the chips there. Yeah, and an early game. So those are definitely good to have in your pocket as an Auburn fan to look ahead to. My wild card team, you mentioned them. LSU is my wild card team. They're going to be tough. They're coming off a 10-win season. Joe Burrow's back for year two. I think they finally figured it out at quarterback a little bit. As long as he stays healthy, they do have to replace their running back in Nick Brissett, who ran for over 1,000 yards and 14 touchdowns last year. But they have two guys, or they have Clyde Edwards-Helaire back to take over. He ran for over 650 yards and 7 touchdowns. Joe Burrow is also on there as well as a running threat. He scored 7 touchdowns. Almost everybody's back on defense outside of Devin White, although Devin White was a fantastic defensive player. You get a lot of talent back as well. So it will be it'll be interesting. You get Alabama at home. You have to go to Alabama, but you get Texas A&M to end the season at home. You get Florida at home as well, and so you could kind of control your own destiny, and you get have to play at Texas. So that's why LSU is my wild card team. And what is your best game in the SEC?
Well, I went with the Iron Bowl. I think you could go with any number of games. There's so many good ones. It seems like every week there's a major marquee game in that conference that you really be anxious to go to and see the atmosphere of it. But I ultimately went with Alabama-Auburn, the Iron Bowl. It's at Auburn this year, and it so rarely disappoints, so went with that one.
Yeah, again, just like the ACC, I think there are two games three games that could potentially change your division winners. That game, and then LSU at Alabama's. Alabama's had their number the last couple times, but that's a heated rivalry with Saban. And then, of course, Florida-Georgia is, you don't want to say a de facto East title game, but that's what it could come down to, the winner of that game heading to the SEC title game to represent the East Division. But the SEC has, week in and week out, has a great game on every week. And so it's really tough to pick just one or two of them. And a lot of it depends on results earlier in the season. Auburn, Oregon, LSU, Texas, and things like that really will shape if either of those teams lose multiple games early, kind of takes the luster off of their matchup with Alabama. If Florida loses to Miami and Georgia loses early, that takes the luster off of that game. So a lot of it depends on early season results, but the SEC is always entertaining. They have the best music on their network station as well. I hate to say everything means more, but they do things a lot better than most of the other conferences. There's no talk about the SEC playing 9 a.m. games so people could watch them. If the SEC had a game on at 9 o'clock at night, local time, or 10 o'clock at night, local time, people are going to go, and they don't have those problems. The SEC is just fun to watch. If you're a college football fan and you want the pure just stuff of college football, you got to watch an SEC game. And it'll just – it takes your breath away a little bit about with the pageantry, the passion, and everything. You could be watching, you know, Ole Miss, Mississippi State, Ole Miss, or, you know, Kentucky, Florida game, anybody in the SEC, and it's a fun game. So that's my take on the SEC. That's any final thoughts, TJ?
No, I agree with everything you just said. Really, really love watching that conference play. It's a great product. Excited for our next previews, and then we get into our bread and butter, the Big Ten. But certainly excited to continue this as we get ever closer to the season.
Yep, and before the Big Ten, next week we got the Group of Five. Don't want to leave them out, and Independence. So we will talk Notre Dame, BYU, Army. Who else is in there? UMass.
Army.
All those independent. Yep, said Army's going to, you know, Army's fun to talk about now. Talk about a triple option team who could rattle some cages and make some noise and maybe put a scare into Michigan. They're a fun team to talk about. And can only hope. But they're a fun team to talk about. We'll have the Group of Five as well, who should have some strong matchups as well. So, TJ, thanks for joining us, and we'll close the podcast out.
Absolutely. Thanks, everybody.
All right. That does it for our SEC and ACC previews. Thank you for joining us as we go around the nation to talk college football. We'd like to step out of our comfort zone in the Big Ten and talk about other conferences as well and how they look. We're just passionate about college football and talk about this stuff. And we like the national view of it as well, not just our little cubbyhole in the Big Ten and see how the rest of the nation affects the Big Ten and affects the college football playoff as well. So thanks for being along with the ride. You can check us out at HoosierHuddle.com. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes as well as anywhere else you get your podcasts from. And follow us on Twitter at Hoosier_Huddle. And we'll be back next week to break down the Group of Five as well as Independence, and then we'll get back into the familiar Big Ten, and we'll have a separate preview for the Big Ten West and the Big Ten East. That way we can touch on every single team in those conferences and give them their due diligence as well. So thank you. We'll be back on same time on Monday next week.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey. Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.